Hello, I'm Sarah Hughes. I'm a writer from the Northeast and I'm so happy to welcome you to the Woman Up podcast. This podcast is Worky Ticket Theatre's response to the global COVID-19 pandemic, which highlights Northeast women's stories through a series of audio plays and real-life interviews. This exciting project will create a history, actually, let's make that a herstory, to add to our heritage in the Northeast, so that now and in the future, Northeast women's stories of the pandemic will be heard through our podcast series. These podcasts contain adult themes and some strong language.
So I'm here with Sarah. I'm really excited because we're going to be talking about your play.
Yes.
Can you start with telling us what it's about and what it's called, actually, at first?
It's called Above My Pay Grade, which is very fitting for me, I think. It's called Above My Pay Grade, and it is a monologue, really, and it's written from the perspective of a character called Michelle, who is a worker who, she's not a social worker, she is a lower pay grade than that, and she supports young people who are transitioning out of the local authority care system. That's her job. And basically the premise of the play is that she is on a workplace wellbeing event on Zoom, and she gets finally her chance to kind of let rip about what it's been like.
So what inspired you to write this play?
I think I said when we were recording episode one that kids became my kind of real obsessive focus. In that first lockdown, I was really, really paranoid about how young people were doing, and because I've worked with kids in care a lot over the years, they were specifically at the forefront of my mind, and I just kept thinking about particular kids who I'd worked with, just knowing that they were going to be completely and utterly, I mean, people talked about isolation, their isolation was a completely different level to what I experienced or most people I know experienced. I've got friends who are social workers and stuff, so I'd kind of picked up stories, pretty awful stories to be honest, from them, about what they were seeing during the pandemic with these kind of very, very young people who were either living completely on their own or living in supported accommodation.
What I love about it is that you've also got a surprise actor in your...
Yes.
You said it was a monologue, but there's a little surprise.
It's true, yeah, it's a monologue with a little surprise, yes. Yeah. So one of my sons, won't say which one, makes a little star appearance because we talked about this loads when we were planning the plays. There's a tendency, isn't there, for it to be really, really heavy, and we want people listening to these podcasts and these response plays to just have some light and shade, because there has been light and shade in the pandemic.
Course, yeah.
There have been moments where you've laughed till you've cried, and then you've cried till you've laughed again. So yes, the little surprise midway through with my son's star turn just hopefully provides a little bit of comic relief.
And you're obviously going to be in the performer as well.
I am, which I'm a little bit terrified about, because I was an actor like 100 years ago, but I'm a bit rusty, but I've done plenty of practice. I won't let you down, I promise.
Trust you on that one. And just to end this, I'm going to ask what we asked all of the women who we work with throughout the whole of Woman Up. What made you want to scream during the pandemic?
What didn't make a scream? There was, I think the really obvious one, which was homeschooling. I remember I've got three little boys, and I really hit a wall in the February half term because I just got to a point where I thought, this is actually never going to end. Every time I thought that we were going to get the word that they were going back to school, they didn't. But I think, to be honest, the biggest thing that's made us scream is just the way that it's been handled by the government, and just the error after error after error, which has just obviously resulted in carnage and misinformation, and I think has added to everybody's anxiety over it.
Thanks very much. I'm really looking forward to listening to your play.
Thank you.
Episode 2, Above My Pay Grade, written and performed by me, Sarah Hughes, directed by Corinne Kilvington. Michelle loves her job helping young people in the care system. She prides herself on helping them feel less alone. But when the coronavirus crisis enforces periods of isolation, she finds it hard to watch them struggle. So when she's invited along to an online workplace wellbeing event to talk about her experiences working in social care, she pulls no punches. Hiya! Can you hear us? You can? Oh, good. I'm Michelle Haynes. I get Shell for short. I'm from South Shields. I'm 34. Not that that matters, like, how old I am. God, I sound like I'm on blind date or Take Me Out or something, don't I? I'm a support worker for kids who've just recently left the care system and are transitioning into living independently. I'm not meant to call them kids, like, they're clients or service users. I think that's the preferred name for them at the moment. But they're always just kids to me. Babies, really. Anyway, my manager, Julie, she kind of twisted my arm to speak at this workplace wellbeing event. And I wasn't really keen, but Julie said I'd be able to give a good insight into how much the last 18 months have taken their toll on the staff, as well as the kids, the service users. Sorry. So, I'll apologise in advance if I waffle on a bit. I'm not usually one for public speaking. Yeah, I'm just glad they changed this so it was on Zoom, to be honest. If I'd had to stand up in the Civic Centre in front of you all, I think my legs would have given way. Oh, and I'm also apologising in advance if I get interrupted by my son. He's on his third isolation this term, bless him, because someone not even in his class got COVID. Apparently they had a shared playtime. Outdoors, last Thursday. Oh, honestly. Anyway, I've heavily bribed him to just leave me in peace for an hour, so fingers crossed. Right, okay, so I thought I'd start with how I felt, how I think we all felt in that week before the first lockdown actually happened. For me, that was the scariest bit. You could see what was happening in Italy and Spain and France, Northern Ireland. They were ahead of us as well, weren't they? You knew it was just a matter of time until they closed the schools and told everyone they needed to stay inside. It felt like a really bad 80s horror film. I was quite panicked, if I'm honest. And at work, we were just scrambling, desperately trying to think of ways we could help the kids before everything closed down. There were a lot of tears in the staff room. I think I worked probably 60 hours in the week before the lockdown. Every night when we left the office, I went to the supermarket and just got whatever I could, then went dropping it in for the kids in their flats. I just desperately wanted to make sure that they had enough food, enough supplies, you know. I was one of those mad people buying all the loo roll. But it wasn't for me. So with our service, whenever we start working with a young person who's coming out of foster care or a children's home, we really focus on getting them ready to move into their own place. We do loads of stuff to help them prepare. Budgeting, you know, how to pay bills, how to do a weekly food shop, wash their clothes, how to clean the flat. But how could we have prepared them for that situation? We never saw it coming. Well, nobody did they? I just felt sick. Sick to my stomach knowing how alone those kids were going to be. I personally was frightened enough at the start of the lockdown. I was waking up in the night, bloody palpitations, anxious as hell. And I had my husband and two kids to lean on, to take comfort from and, you know, have a cuddle when I needed one. those kids were completely alone, you know. Absolutely broke me heart. Anyway, it came, didn't it? The lockdown. March the 23rd, I think, wasn't it? And I almost felt relieved when they just did it and all the speculation died down. We were in it now. And I think at work, we kind of felt galvanised. We knew we had to get a grip and find new ways to support people. So we created this big timetable of activities on Zoom. Bloody Zoom. I know people got a bit zoomed out by the summer, but thank God we had it, really. We did loads of online bits and bobs. Bingo, they all loved that. Fitness classes, quizzes and stuff. We had to beg, borrow and steal laptops and iPads, like, well, not actually steal, but you know what I mean. I'd never heard of the term digital inequality before, but believe me, it's a thing. All these online activities were cropping up left, right and centre, and our kids were like, iPad? I haven't got an iPad, man. I can barely manage to buy me food shopping. I kept looking at my own two children, and it was stressful homeschooling them and dealing with all of their anxieties about this weird new way of life. They're 7 and 8, a boy and a girl, and they fight like cat and bloody dog. We could have technically sent them to school because I was classed as a key worker, but I just felt it was the right thing to do to keep them at home. Not because I was worried about COVID particularly, but because I felt so sorry for their teachers. No PPE for them, was there? I used to laugh when they said on the news that the schools were closed. They certainly didn't look very closed, did they? The world and his wife were bending the rules to send their kids into school, and I thought it was a bit of a joke, to be honest. They were okay anyway, my two. They missed their friends really badly, but they were kind of set up to succeed, you know? As much as any kid could be at that point. They had two parents at home, albeit desperately trying to get on with work. They had endless snacks, most of them totally unhealthy. Security, love, and they had internet and iPads. Both of them. One each. Remember when Jeremy Corbyn said he'd make sure every family in the country had internet access? And everyone laughed at him, didn't they? Said it was a stupid policy. Aye, well, it didn't seem so stupid when you were looking at a caseload full of teenagers without internet or devices in the middle of a worldwide lockdown. But we sorted it. We got devices and internet hooked up for every single one of them. I'm really proud of that. And we did have some great laughs on those Zoom sessions in the early days. It was a novelty, wasn't it? We did a fancy dress one Friday night and I dropped daft stuff off for them all to wear. Oh, it was just lovely to see them smiling.
Mum!
Oh, God. Sorry, that's me son shouting from next door. I think it's fine. He's gone quiet again. He must have remembered I'm on this call. Sorry. Right, where was I up to? Oh, the Zooms. Yes, the Zooms were really fun. But just switching off at the end of the session was always so hard. I just wanted to reach through the screen and hug them. These kids, they'd already been through so much in their lives, you know. You don't end up in care for nothing. And now they were dealing with this in a little bedsit on their own. I found that element really hard. Emotionally, I couldn't switch off those thoughts.
Mum! I need you!
I am so sorry to do this, but can you just bear with us for 1 minute while I just check he's okay? Oh, I'm sure he's fine, but I better just check. I'll pop myself on mute. Charlie, what the hell is the matter?
Nothing's the matter.
Well, what are you screaming for us for then? You know I'm on this call and I told you, you absolutely were not to interrupt me under any circumstances.
But I've had a poo and I'm not sure if my bum's properly clean.
Are you joking me?
No, it gets itchy if you don't wipe it properly, Mum. You know that.
You know, if you weren't in isolation and you were having this poo at school rather than at home, would you be asking Mrs. Jackson to come and check if you'd wiped all the poo off properly?
Ew, God, man, no.
Well, pretend I'm Mrs. Jackson, Charlie, and sort your own friggin' bum out.
Hello, everyone. I'm so sorry. He was just stuck on some of his maths lesson. All sorted. Oh, God, I've lost where I am in my notes, though. 2 seconds. I knew this would happen. Oh, okay. Found where I'm up to. The team. My lovely team. It helped so much that I've got great supportive colleagues. The lasses at work. And the lads. There's only a couple of lads in our office, but that's fairly typical for this kind of work. You just get more females drawn to it. We definitely felt like we had to keep supporting each other. And when one of us broke down, someone else was there to pick them up, to say, you're doing a great job. You're doing all you possibly can do. I started a scheme at work, unofficial mind, a bit of a rota to keep an eye on the kids during evenings and weekends. We incorporated it into that hours exercise rule. Remember that? It's mad, isn't it? Even now, a year on, looking back, the idea that we were only allowed out of the house for an hour a day and it had to be deemed exercise. Bizarre. Well, we definitely bent some rules there. You weren't supposed to exercise with people outside your household, were you? But hey, sue me. I've got no regrets about that. I'd rather have had a slap on the wrist from the police than the suicide of one of those kids on me conscience. Funny things go on inside your head when you're alone for too long. And those kids were alone far too much. I felt a huge responsibility when speaking to the service users. To be optimistic. It was false optimism. But I like to think I did a good job of pretending I really believed things were going to be fine. Me and my colleagues, our main objective was to reassure them. Tell them it was for a finite amount of time and that we'd be there to help them through it. Until this new normal that they kept talking about on the news turned up and then everything would be okay. It wasn't that we lied to them, gave them false promises or anything. We just tried to let them know that they weren't alone and that we'd muddle through it together. I stopped putting my makeup and my nice clothes on for the Zooms after a couple of weeks. The kids were telling me they felt depressed and saying, what's the point in getting all ready when you're not even allowed to go anywhere? And I had to agree with them. So I'd log onto the Zooms, in me jammies, with no makeup on. And we'd all kind of say, look at the state of us. And we'd have a laugh about it. We wanted them to know that the staff were human and feeling crap as well. We just wanted them to know that their fears and anxieties were completely normal. And I think we did do that, to a large extent. I just wish we'd had more staff to pick up the workload. We really did work ourselves into the ground over that first lockdown. Not because there was pressure from managers or anything, just because we had to. You don't get into this job if you're not going to be all in for the people you're there to support. It's not a 9-to-5. And to be honest, that has caused a lot of issues in my own family. I've been accused by my own kids of caring about the kids at work more than I care about them. Plenty of times. Usually when they're trying to ask us how to do fractions or spellings when I'm on a call with a young person who's crying and desperate. Yeah, I've definitely been guilty of ignoring my own kids or being really narky with them. My husband works for an IT company and he just mentally switches off at 5 o'clock when he logs off and he wants me to be able to do the same. I think he thinks I'm a martyr, that I should have clearer boundaries. I see his face when my work phone rings on a Sunday lunchtime or something, as it always does. It does take its toll on your relationship. The problem is, social services have been slashed to the bone over the past 10 years since I did my training. So by the time the pandemic hit, we just didn't have the resources to deal with the amount of kids we had on our caseloads. And there's this huge shortage of qualified social workers in South Tyneside. So when you did have a concern, there was nobody to liaise with. And you can't just go, well, their social worker isn't picking up the phone. I'll just tell that kid to hang on till next week. You just get your clothes back on at 11 o'clock at night and you go and check on the kid yourself. And now, it seems to me that COVID, this pandemic, has become a really convenient excuse to just brush the huge gaps in services under the carpet. Haven't got a social worker? Oh, it's 'cause of COVID. Had your support hours cut? It'll be down to COVID. Can't get a job or an apprenticeship or even benefits? COVID. And the people who impose these lockdowns, the government, the advisers, whoever, I just don't think they've got any perception whatsoever of the consequences for these young people. The news every night was about care homes and schools and hospitals. And I'm not saying that's not all vitally important, because it is. But did you see one news report about care leavers? It's a load of crap. And I know I probably shouldn't say all of that, but well, the point of this wellbeing event is to discuss what the pandemic has done to our wellbeing. And my wellbeing, well, it's not great, if I'm honest. I'm knackered from trying to be all things to all people. A good mam, a half-decent wife, a friend, a daughter, a school teacher. All of that is hard enough, even before you throw work into the mix. And I'm just angry. I'm angry lots of the time. Because the inequalities these kids already had to face are now stacked up so high, it's a wall I don't think they'll ever get over. I don't know what the answer is. That's above my pay grade. And to be totally honest, I'm too tired to fight the system. I've just had to accept I'll just do the best I can. For everybody. Something that's really important now, I think, is to have things in place for if this ever, God forbid, happened again. We have to have learned something from it as a society. Otherwise, all those people who've lost their lives either to COVID or to suicide or because of delays in cancer treatment, well, they've really just died in vain, haven't they? We have to prioritise safe and consistent ways to support people if face-to-face isn't an option. Right. I don't want to finish on a negative. I'm actually a really positive person usually. I've seen some incredible acts of kindness over the past 18 months. Foster families offering to take kids back, unpaid, so that they weren't alone for the lockdowns. Neighbours stopping us after I'd done a doorstep visit to a kid, saying, look, we're aware of their circumstances and we want to help. The kids themselves checking in on each other and on us, the staff, asking if we're doing okay. They're just amazing. And they deserve the absolute best that we can possibly offer them. My brilliant, brilliant colleagues who've been tireless in their efforts to support the kids. They've shown them such love. And I hope that when they're old and grey, they'll tell their grandkids about this crazy, awful time and say, I did something really good, really important, and I'm proud of myself for it. Right, that's all I've got for you. I don't know if that's the type of speech I was supposed to make, really. I hope it was okay. Thank you for letting me have me say. And thank you for listening. Worky Ticket Theatre Company is proud to present 3 brand new audio response plays and a short film, all inspired by our research and written, performed, directed and produced by women from the North East. Woman Up has been funded by the National Lottery Heritage Fund. The podcasts are presented by me, Sarah Hughes, produced by Worky Ticket and edited by Studio 26.